Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. Later in the program, our exclusive conversation with Spirit AeroSystems Defense and Space President Duane Hawkins on how the aerospace giant is growing its military business, and the company's Jared Bartlett on winning the competition to help the U.S. Air Force re-engine its B-52 bombers. But first, joining us now is Leanne Kuhnert, the Value Stream Leader for Landing Systems and Military Programs for Collins Aerospace, a unit of Raytheon Technologies. She's part of the Collins U.S. Air Force and Defense Logistics Agency team that supports F-16 and C-130 wheel brake units that was the winner of the 2020 Secretary of Defense Performance-Based Logistics Award for the subsystems level. Leanne, congratulations and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And before we get started, Leonardo DRS sponsors our global coverage, Northrop Grumman, our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall, Fincantieri, Marinette Marine, our naval coverage, General Atomics Aeronautical Systems, our coverage of strategy, and Beretta USA, our land warfare coverage. It's an absolute pleasure. I remember when B.F. Goodrich at the time developed those wheel brake units for the C-130s as well as for the F-16 in the hopes that this whole design process was going to yield units that were also that were not only cheaper to support, but also would improve availability rates for these kind of airplanes. Talk to us a little bit about the award and what it means.
Well, I think first, you know, if we talk about the award, first and foremost, it means that we have a fantastic partner out at Hill Air Force Base and within the DLA community. This was truly and by far a team effort and the one that would not have been possible without them. And I think for me, you know, personally, I think of the word validation, and I think it's customer validation that if you put the right team together, you have the right service-oriented mindset, you put your customer first, the sky's the limit, and small things can add up to really big things. And I think that's what we have recognized here in this PBL award.
I think that that's an absolutely elegant way to put it, right? I mean, you can save money by doing big things, or you can save money by doing a lot of little things, but doing them well. Talk to us about the way you guys, right? What makes what you're doing so special?
Well, I think part of what we do, and it started even before a performance-based logistics program, is we keep the whole life cycle of the product in mind. So we design and develop something that can be maintained, that the customer can easily maintain. The wheel on both of these aircraft, a lock ring wheel, for example, comes apart. It's three main pieces. And if I can do it at a trade show, an experienced maintainer can change a tire in about a minute or two or less. So we kind of started there. And then when we move into the support phase and we get enough aircraft or enough of the product on wing on the aircraft, we start making sure that we understand how our product is performing. We work with our customers to get their feedback. We actually painstakingly measure the wear performance on our carbon, and we kind of set a product baseline and we go from there and work with our customer on how to improve that.
What are the lessons from your program that you think can be applied to other programs, right? I mean, there's a big drive right now to reduce cost, but also increase availability rates to improve readiness. What are some of the lessons that you guys have developed that you think is most applicable to almost any support program?
I think it starts with partnership and relationship. I know it might sound a little squidgy, but we partnered with our counterparts here to understand what was important to them. And we were honest and transparent about what was important to us. And we came up with the model that set a baseline for our performance. We did some interesting things by pulling in reuse of carbon early in the process. We set a power by the landing so that the Air Force itself could better predict what its maintenance costs and what its flying costs would be. We set, you know, decreasing more savings with more landings, which helps everybody in the end. And I would say, you know, we set up a pretty groundbreaking exchange program where we made it really easy for our customers. They could give us a worn a worn break, and we would return them either a new or a reutilized carbon heat sink so that they could put it back into the service. We took on also the forecasting of demand. We took that off of their plate and put it on our scope. It allowed us to further flow down stability to our supply chain and give them longer term forecasts. And I think we all know in this industry, you know, the more predictive you can be, the more stable your volume is, the better we can plan. And the further you can push that into your supply base, the better off everybody will be.
This isn't just about process, right? This is also about technology insertion. And you guys are trying to do this as seamlessly as possible, right? Because there are certification issues, airworthiness issues. Talk to us about how you guys are actually putting remarkably advanced technology into this process in order to get the desired outcome and do it seamlessly.
Yeah, so we had the unique perspective here and not being on the original production line. So we had to insert our product onto an existing airframe. We did not have a clean design, or clean sheet design. So our technical team here and our operations team here at Collins in our wheel and brake business is by far the best. We design something so it seamlessly goes on wing. We generate a lot of those processes from our commercial marketplace where we have to design equipment that can be interchanged with other competitors' equipment. And that allowed us to take those lessons learned and apply them here. I already talked about, you know, the maintenance savings. I already talked about, you know, speaking with the customers, understanding what more they wanted, and made sure that we gave them exactly what they were looking for at the best possible value. And so it's a couple of different pieces of technology. But technology, I don't think, has to just be in the product itself, but you can also insert it in the maintainability and reliability of your product. And for example, our C-130 product stays on wing for 10 years. You know, with some maintenance, that's 10 years that people don't have to worry about removals and replacing.
You know, I didn't ask you this, Leanne, but talk to us a little bit about, right, where you guys are on availability rates and how much savings we're talking about. And you guys are doing this by setting ambitious goals. So tell us, what are your goals to come, right, downstream? What kind of improvement do you guys want to deliver?
So the savings are by far the most astounding part of this whole story. In year one, we saved about $2.5 million. Total program translates to over $87 million. And all those cost avoidance and maintenance, you know, technologies that we just talked about, total program savings of $117 million. That's airplanes, you know, for the Air Force or whatever it is that their priorities are. And for us, that just keeps us supporting our customers. We have a team of military veterans here that connects to the mission like you wouldn't believe. And for us, we just like supporting our customers and we like making them happy. And these kind of awards are just validation that we're doing the right thing.
And where do you want to be next year, 2 years, 3 years down the line?
Well, for us, you know, we're putting C-130 equipment around the world on fleets around the world. We've expanded our F-16. We obviously are always looking to expand the number of people who use and operate our equipment. And, you know, we're hoping to also look for other opportunities as well for new aircraft coming down the line.
Leanne, thanks very much. Congratulations again to you and the entire team. Best of luck in the future and look forward to talking to you again next time you break like the $500 million mark on program savings.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that.
And joining us now is Duane Hawkins, the president of Spirit AeroSystems Defense, as well as Jared Bartlett, a senior manager for defense business operations at the company's Wichita facility. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Duane, it is great to reconnect. It has been too long since our interview in September 2019. It seems like forever ago at the Air Force Association annual meeting. It's really been interesting tracking how you guys have been methodically following the strategy that you and I discussed so long ago. You guys were focused on growing the defense side of the business. Obviously, You do the CH-53K fuselages, you do B-21 work. Obviously, there was a tremendous impact on the company with the 737 MAX challenges. And then, of course, the coronavirus pandemic that has led to some 8,000 jobs, unfortunately, being lost on the commercial side of the business. But you guys have really pressed ahead. You bought Fiber Materials, FMI, bolstering your precision weapons portfolio. You guys have now positions on Patriot, on THAAD, and a lot of other munitions and weapons, which you said was in your growth strategy. So walk us through where you guys are in the new business and the kind of growth we're going to see from you guys in, say, the coming 5 years.
It does match pretty much what we had said back in September 2019. So, you know, for example, last year, our Spirit, our defense business grew 20%. And, you know, we're around 20% or so of the total business. Now, some of that is from defense growth, but unfortunately, a lot of that is because our commercial business has gone down so much. But we still have the goal of achieving 40 to 50% defense, you know, by the old tally, the way we used to count our revenue. And at the time, I think I talked to you, we were around $6.5-7 billion. And so, you know, we're really proud of the growth we've made. Now, so all those programs that you just mentioned, B-21, CH-53K, and then B-280, some of those that have been with us for a while, we are now much farther along on those programs. We are performing and delivering on all of them. And we're, and I say that because that's really important, because part of our growth strategy is that you have to execute on what you have, and you have to execute successfully. If you don't, you might as well, you know, forget about growth, because execution is number one. And thankfully, I can say this, and this credit goes to the team, we've executed exceptionally well on all of the programs that we currently have. And so that has led to other things for us to go do. So we are, a lot of our growth is coming in the classified area and on new programs that I can't really talk about here in this forum, but new programs that are coming or will be coming out to the warfighter. And we're involved at the very beginning phase of this. So maybe not the conceptual phase, but certainly at the beginning of the design phase, which is exactly where we like to be, because that's the value that we added on the B-21. You know, we designed all of the stuff, all the parts that we're making for that. Same with CH-53K, same with B-280. We designed all those parts. Matter of fact, if you come to our factory, whether it's commercial or defense, virtually everything that we're manufacturing right now, we designed. And you know, we see, so we've leveraged that design capability. We've been able to maintain all our engineering strength, even through the downturns. We've actually absorbed several hundred engineers and other skilled technicians into the defense world over the last year. And we've been able to maintain that capability and really even enhance and grow that capability. So we've offered to our customers a design capability that's really unmatched. I think that's one of our big discriminators, by the way, with against anybody we would call our competition, is we can design it. We not only design it so it operates and functions to the requirements, but we design it for production. We design it for automation. We design it for the right cost targets. We consider everything in that design, not just designing for operability. And we think that's one of the big differences that we have and one of the advantages. The other thing is we're very affordable in our rates and what we charge. And I've worked in a lot of defense companies, as you know, not a lot, but a few, you know, and worth it with a lot. And the design engineers we have here, the structural design and systems design guys are as good or better than any company I've ever worked for. And I've worked for some great companies.
I was going to point out that you guys, given the kind of throughput you guys have on the 737 program, I think many people don't recognize that when those fuselages leave Wichita, they are just assembled largely in Renton, but those come as complete aircraft. And, you know, and I'm not minimizing the role Boeing has on it, but yeah. You guys are quite expert in that. And you jumped ahead on my question. I was going to ask you, you know, because you guys are really in a competitive space, whether it's with GKN or Collins Aerospace or any one of a number of other players that are in that market. I want to ask you, Duane, right? Your CEO, Tom Gentile, has said that he's committed to investment, right? But at the end of the day, you just have to look at the enormous impact of this on the commercial side of Spirit. I think I know what the answer to this is, but are you going to have access to the resources you need in order to grow your end of the business? And conversely, does the prognosis look better on the commercial side, and how does that help you?
So the short answer to your question is yes. But, you know, Vago, I'll take you back to, 2020 was certainly the most challenging year of my career. And I thought I had seen a few, after 9/11 and some other things. But this clearly was a challenging year, especially for our company. But, we didn't change our focus on strategy. And so our strategy has been to diversify our business. That's always been our strategy. And so we made two acquisitions. One we decided not to do, but we made two acquisitions in 2020, even though it was really a rough year for us, the roughest year you could possibly think of. So we bought FMI, which is a high temperature material company that really helps us shape hypersonics. We can talk about that later. And we went ahead and did that acquisition. We went ahead and bought the Belfast operations, former Shorts operation from Bombardier. Right. And of course, that's in a different space for us than we are currently focused in right now. And so we went ahead and did those. I think that took a lot of courage and a lot of strength on the management team's part, particularly Tom and the board, to allow that to happen. And I firmly believe the board when they say, the next one you come to us with, we're going to fund you. We're going to do that. There's plenty of money out there for us to go get. We're not worried about that. And there's a lot of confidence in our company. So I don't worry about coming up with the money. We just have to find the right for the next M&A opportunity. We just have to find the right one and or two. And or three, maybe, down the road. But those are because, like we've said, this growth that we're going to do to 40-50%, it's not all going to be organic. Some of it's going to be M&A. And that's OK. That's all. Everybody agrees with that, including all the way up to the board, that that's OK, which I find that refreshing, that I don't have to go find all that business on my own, hitting the pavement, with my team. That's kind of how we look at it. So no, I have absolutely no concern at all that, we'll be able to fund whatever acquisition makes sense, particularly when we're diversifying the way we'd like to diversify for the future.
There is a lot of discussion about a flattening defense budget. And you mentioned that FMI in particular gives you a lot of that high temperature. I should point out that it also expands your reach into space. You guys are on the Mars mission as well, which is very, very exciting, at a very historic time. Yes. Where do you see real pockets of growth and opportunity in the defense piece? I know we're going to talk to Jared in a minute about the B-52 re-engineering program, where you guys, anybody who knows anything about history knows the B-52 came out of Wichita, and the Wichita factory, the last of which was the youngest of which is 60 years old. But yes. Where do you see the real pockets of growth in a budget that's going to be flat, if not down over time?
Yeah. Well, we look at that. I've been in the business a long time, as you have. And, so we see, there'll probably be some curtailing of the defense budget, no question about it. It won't be, of the magnitude that we saw in the commercial business in 2020, which is, 60-70% depending on who you ask about that. But there could be some flattening there. We've always felt need to be on programs that are solid in terms of what the warfighter really needs, solidly funded, and in terms of execution. And so we think that's the case with the ones we're on now. Now, as far as where can we go? Now that we have FMI and now that we have the capabilities that we have there And if you couple the FMI high temperature material capability, which they're the best in the world at that, and then you look at our capability on the production automation side, which mostly comes from our commercial experience, when you put those two things together, hypersonics makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of our customers, a lot of the primes and the actually the military agencies see that value there, that, you know, you put those two together and there's a high value proposition there. So that's one of the areas we think is going to grow. We think that that'll stay solidly funding because of, you know, the threat and the fact that it's needed. And there's a lot of money towards that. And even if that got cut a little bit, there's still going to be a lot of money towards that. So we see hypersonics as a way for us to continue to grow, particularly in the areas of high temperature material, thermal protection systems, right, that kind of thing, which wasn't really there for us until we bought FMI. And they didn't have the production expertise. We didn't have the material expertise. Now you put them two together and it's really a powerful thing. So that's one area. The other area that's been a lot of interest from our customers has been in the area of what they call attritable aircraft, or aircraft, unaccompanied aircraft that are not quite as sophisticated, or not nearly as sophisticated maybe as the real thing, but there's still a value there. There's a low cost proposition there, and the material is composite, which of course we're experts at that. We're one of the best in the country at that, both designing and production. So we see that as another area. So attritable aircraft, we think that is a great area. We're already working on several things there. We think that's a good space for us to get into. It doesn't totally encroach on what our prime customers are trying to do. We certainly don't want to do that. We want to be a super tier one type supplier, but that's an area that, you know, we think we can play, and so do a lot of our customers. So we're seeing that as a growth opportunity. So those are two things. Space is another one that we're looking at. There's a lot of interest in space. You mentioned what we're doing at FMI. They have quite a few things they're working on. Frankly, that wasn't really on our radar screen until kind of recently. And the engagement that we've had from the industry, again, we see a very valuable application there for Spirit to deploy in space, both on design and manufacturing. So we're just starting that area, other than what we're doing with the high temperature, because we're on anything that requires high temperature materials, we're on that, and FMI is our vehicle into that.
Jared, bring you into the conversation. You've been very patient. The B-52 is another key part of growth. Obviously, the U.S. Air Force wants to re-engine the airplanes. Eight engines is the form factor, and what's going to happen. General Electric, Pratt & Whitney, and Rolls-Royce are all bidding on that work. And you guys are, you know, I mean, it's great to have engines, but you got to attach them to the wing. And that's where you guys come in. You're the world's leading strut and nacelle maker, servicing the global industry at the end of the day. Talk to us about what you guys are doing to posture for that competition and what the gates there are, right? Because again, everybody focuses on the engine part of it. And you guys are obviously in a competitive dynamic. GKN, Collins and others are in the space as well. Talk to us a little bit about the timeline and what it is that you think gives you guys the edge on that, aside from the fact that, you know, those airplanes originally originated from your factory.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Thanks, Vago, and thanks for having us. The airplane, first of all, is just a remarkable airplane. And you think about how it's changed its mission over the years to what it's doing today. And now, you know, some of the things that Dwayne talked about in terms of hypersonics and hypersonic weapons will continue to keep that airplane as a viable asset for the Air Force for many years to come, but they need new engines in order to provide the capability that the Air Force needs. And so for Spirit, you know, the thing is, we have been developing strut nacelle manufacturing techniques and capabilities for decades. As the largest engine pylon provider in the world. We have developed many manufacturing techniques that we think help the Air Force and Boeing, who will be the systems integrator on the engines on the airplane, really helps reduce the risk and improve schedule to make sure that the engines get on the airplane in a timely manner and the asset gets back to the warfighter to complete its mission. So we've been developing techniques and capabilities for assembly on pylons and the cells for decades. And I think one of the unique things about Spirit and the position that we're in as the, you know, tier one, super tier one provider of aerostructures in the industry is, you mentioned the engine manufacturers, and we've worked with all of the engine manufacturers. We understand the primes' requirements because we work with many primes, and we work directly with the services. So we're well positioned to make sure that the B-52 has new engines to keep that thing flying for many years to come. And you're right, rolled out of what then was the Boeing Wichita Military Aircraft Company in what is our historic Plant 2, where we transitioned it to delivering 737s, but it would be quite a journey to continue the legacy of the B-52 and provide structures for it out of Wichita again.
So, Jared, give us a little bit sense of a timeline on this, right? Because it's been a while since we've had any B-52 update as everybody has descended into their own cones. I mean, obviously, you guys can't descend into any cone. You're living this every day. And I should say, full disclosure, your boss is also listening to this at the moment, who's expecting performance out of you. What is the timeline we're going to be seeing on this program? Because I got to tell you, the B-52 re-engineering program has got to be one of the longest. You know, good Lord, man, we've been talking about this thing for forever and a day. So give us a sense on what the schedule is.
Yeah, I mean, as the tier one provider, we are sort of at the mercy of the Air Force's schedule. And what they've publicly said is this summer, they will be making an engine decision sometime this summer. And, as the structures provider, we think that, we're going to need to back up and be able to provide at least some design assist and things like that to the systems integrator prior to installation on the aircraft. But yeah, as you can imagine, hanging engines on a 60-year-old airplane is no small feat. So it is going to take quite a bit of test and evaluation before we're actually going to see new engines flying on the B-52. But again, we're kind of at the mercy of what the Air Force is doing and where Boeing is right now in their acquisition process and looking for partners on the program. And so we're going to stay aligned with them and support them whenever, whatever they need. I mean, I think the bottom line for us is we want to make sure that whenever the decision is made, we can quickly and efficiently provide this capability back to the warfighter. And we're well positioned to do that because of the things that we talked about in terms of our capacity, our capability, and our know-how to provide these kinds of structures for a program like the B-52 commercial engine replacement program.
Guys, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Dwayne, it was a pleasure talking again. Jared, great having you on as well. Very best of luck in the program. And I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to visit with you guys in Wichita. Very much looking forward to doing that and getting back to really what I think is an incredible facility. Best of luck on the program and look forward to having you guys back on again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Vago.
Thank you, Vago.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.